For the past few years, Chicago continues to daily make the news for its violence. The media has painted the South Side and West Side of Chicago as scary and dangerous. Over the July 4th weekend in 2013, 82 people were shot and 14 of them killed in Chicago. It's not the first time a holiday was marred by gun violence. Over Easter, 45 people were shot in the city that's come to be known as Chi-Raq. Chi-Raq stems from a comparison of Chicago to Iraq, as the Department of Defense reported a total of 4,410 deaths of U.S. servicemen and servicewomen during the Operation Iraqi Freedom from 2003 to 2012, and the Chicago Police Murder Report during that same time frame reported a total of 4,265 murders in its city limits. In an article from the New York Times, it was said, Chicago has more murders than any other American city, but much of that violence is concentrated in small areas of the South and West Sides. Many of Chicago's most violent neighborhoods have had public schools and mental health clinics close in recent years, symptoms of budget problems that affect the city, state, and local school districts. This loss of those neighborhood anchors, advocates say, makes stemming the violence all the more difficult. Hearing all this information can cause you to draw conclusions and judgments about a community of people. Well, the Salvation Army is right in the middle of one of these high-crime neighborhoods. The Englewood Red Shield Center, located on 69th Street in Morgan, is run by Captain Nikki and Lieutenant Corey Hughes, and I invited Captain Nikki to join me on the Prepare podcast. Some of the best research you can do on a topic is actually having a conversation with someone that knows the situation and experience firsthand. I hope this conversation opens your eyes a bit wider and softens your heart to a neighborhood that God is at work in among people that He desperately loves. Here's my conversation with Captain Nikki. Hi, Captain Nikki. Welcome to the Prepare Podcast.
Thank you.
So glad you're here. We're going to be talking about some interesting things today. We're going to hear about you, and we're going to hear about the neighborhood that your core is in. You and your husband are the core officers at the Englewood Red Shield Center.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a lot to talk about right now in regards to Chicago. Chicago's in the media a lot, specifically for its violence. And something happened a few years ago. It just seemed like the violence increased a lot. In July, it was like July 4th, 2013, that weekend, 82 people were shot in Chicago, and 14 of those people were killed. And that was pretty significant. I think it was the same year that over Easter, was it the same year or maybe the year after, that 45 people were shot in the city. And after those two main events, Chicago started getting some nicknames that, you know, we're not super proud of. We're, you know, this is what I want you to talk about is the things that are real and maybe the things that are not true, and how the people in Englewood, which gets a lot of media time, what they feel about, you know, being referred to as Chi-Raq. But first, why don't you share with our listeners a bit about you?
I grew up in Belleville, Illinois, which is in the Midland Division for the Salvation Army. I was 12 years old when I was introduced to the Salvation Army. We had just moved back from Texas, and we didn't have a place to live. So my grandparents willingly took my mom and my sister and brother and I to their house, but there was not enough room for my father. And so my father got a cab, and he was going to go to St. Louis, because St. Louis is just across the river from Belleville. And the cab driver was like, well, hey, you know, there's a Salvation Army here in Belleville with a men's lodge. Why don't I take you there so that you're closer to your family? So my father went to the men's lodge, and that's where he was introduced to the Salvation Army. And I remember him coming in this big brown van, picking us up on a Sunday, which we had never gone to church prior to that. And he had a Bible in his hand, and we were just kind of like freaking out, like, what is going on here? Mm. And that's where he became to know Christ. And that's how we got introduced to the Salvation Army. He was a smoker. I remember as a child wrapping up cartons of cigarettes for him for Christmas. And I remember the day that he put his cigarettes on the altar.
Wow.
And he has never touched a cigarette since. But the Salvation Army did wonders for us. Mm-hmm. And that's when our life changed. I became an officer. My mom and father still attend the Corps. My brother attends the Corps. My sister does too. We've all been, our lives have changed because mm-hmm. of the Salvation Army.
Wow. Thank goodness for that cab driver.
I know, wow. Right? I wish I knew who he was.
You know, we have this encouragement campaign that the women's ministries just started not long ago, our department, called 44 and More. So every Monday I send out this, like, encouragement email kind of newsletter. And that topic of, choices, like that cab driver kind of had a choice. He could have just said nothing.
Right.
Like, he could have just took your dad to St. Louis. That was the job at hand, but you know,
he would have gotten more money.
Yeah, I was just gonna say he would have made more money, but he went ahead and said, "Hey, I got it. I'm gonna say this," and he didn't have to. And the things that we say, and the things that we do, and the things that we plan can literally change the trajectory of a family.
It does.
And you are proof of that. Wow. Okay. Cool. Great. That's such a great Salvation Army story.
It is.
I love those ones. Okay. So what else? What else about you, Nikki? What, you became an officer what year?
I became an officer in 1995, and I took a little detour from officership. I left for different reasons, and one of them was to get married, mm-hmm. and so I left the work after only being in for 6 months, and I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let me go back to that. I was 19 when I went to training college.
Yeah.
So I want to say that I didn't know everything I was getting into. Mm. I was just young and, this sounds great. And so at 21, then it was just, I want to say I didn't have my priorities straight.
Mm.
And I wasn't really focused. And so when I left, it was just like it was no big deal. But I left to get married and had a marriage and three beautiful children out of that marriage. The marriage did not work, but it was just a time of reflection for me because when I became a single mom, during this time I was in and out of the Salvation Army. But when I became a single mom, it really hit home for me that, what are you doing, Nikki? You know, and it just, you could just hear God whispering to you, you know you're on the wrong path. You know you're not doing right. And we weren't going to the Corps. My kids really didn't know a lot about Salvation Army. They did, but they didn't. You know, it just wasn't, once I became a single mom, then it was, man, Sunday was my day off. Saturday and Sunday was it. You know, the kids were active in sports, so it just seems like a full-time job. I was going to school full-time, which that was crazy. Being a single mom and running all their things that they had to do, it just was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother went to the Rose Bowl parade for the Salvation Army. And he saw an officer at the time I lived in Indianapolis. And he went up to him and said, hey, this is my sister and her number and address. Will you please invite her to church? And it just is emotional for me because he took that time out to do that.
Mm.
He didn't have to.
Yeah.
But what the beauty of it all is that Corps officer, I went to that Corps before he had a chance to call me.
Hmm.
I mean, we're talking days. It was days. I came on that Sunday with my children, and he was at the end of the line after service greeting us, and he asked me my name, and I said my name, and he was like, hold up. And out of his tunic pocket, he pulled out my name and address. He
wow.
said, I was going to call you this week because I just got back.
Did that give you the shivers to
yes.
see your name on a piece of paper coming out of his pocket?
Yes. And to know that this was where I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to be here all along. And, you know, God never gives up on you.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. You know, even though I could probably go on lists of things that God wouldn't love me for
mm-hmm.
and things I had done, he still had my name on a piece of paper. It was just beautiful.
That's so cool.
So I've been going faithfully ever since
mm-hmm.
because I knew that, you know, God didn't give up on me.
Right.
So from there, I worked for the Indianapolis ARC, and that's where I found my husband.
Hey, me too. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, I met my husband working at the ARC.
That's great.
Yeah, it's like another ARC love story.
I always tell my husband I found my diamond in the rough.
That's right.
So I was an employee. I did human resources and finances, so I wasn't in a lot of contact with the men. I did their gratuity. And so I saw his name, but I never put a face to it. And then he graduated, and they wanted to hire him. Mm-hmm. So, of course, then that's when I got to meet him. And during this time, I probably was a single mom going on 7 years at this point. And I just remember praying to God, I'm praying for a holy man this time.
Yeah.
I'm not praying for anything else because I was selfish on the last time.
Yeah.
But I'm praying for a holy man. And 7 years was a long time of praying. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was in the desert because I'm like, Lord, I'm supposed to be married. This is not, single life is not for me. Mm-hmm. And so when I met him, I don't want to say there was no spark, but it was just like just another piece of paperwork I was filing through. And we got to know each other because he'd have to come to my office, and one thing led to another. And I just remember the Lord telling me, he's the one. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, no. And I tell him the story. He's full aware of the story, but it just was meant to be. And I ended up transferring to the St. Louis ARC. And by that time, we were engaged. So I already knew we had worked things out. He came along a little bit later. But the ARC was just a beautiful place for us. Mm-hmm. That just brings back wonderful memories for us. It's a beautiful program. And I enjoyed my 7 years between the two. I don't know if at that point I knew I wanted to be an officer again, but I wanted to be still active in the church.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing for me that...
It's a deal breaker.
It is. Because I'm not going to get involved with you and then have my heart broken because we don't have the same vision.
Yeah.
And so we had that conversation. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, he had come to me. He's like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I really think we should be officers. And I was just like, whoa, Lord, you're just, okay, we're going to do this. I hear you.
Yes.
So we're going to do it. So it just kind of moved from there. We have had discussion on during that 7 years I prayed for him. And he would just, you just don't know, I was at one of my lowest points. Mm-hmm. He has lost 3 brothers. And that was during those times of that 7 years. And he was like, I can't believe that you were praying for me and I'm way out in the streets doing my thing, but yet you're praying. And it's amazing that we don't realize the power of prayer and how it really does affect people. He didn't know I was praying for him. I didn't know he was in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And so it just makes it a more beautiful thing to realize when those two come together. Wow, you are amazing, God. You are amazing.
Fast forward to where you are now as core officers at the Inglewood Red Shield Center. One of the questions I'm really curious to know is, and we're going to talk about your current appointment, but before even we get to that, what past experiences, maybe another appointment or just life experiences, help prepare you for the ministry you have today?
I'm going to say all of them have, because bottom line is all the cores are the same within. Every core you go to, you're going to a place where people want to be loved. People want to know about Jesus. That all stays the same. And every appointment that I've been in, regardless if it was at THQ, at the ARC, core settings, people want to be loved. They want to feel like they're a part of something. So I feel like even though it was, the setting is different, inside is the same. I think we just become more intentional on how we serve that community. That's where it becomes different. So I would say all appointments prepare you for everything. You know, you gain a little bit more experience, a little bit more knowledge, maybe more culturally sound that you could take this and do it. God's not going to take you somewhere and not equip you. So I feel like all my appointments have been to the benefit of being able to serve in Inglewood.
And how many years have you guys been there now?
We are starting our 5th year. We were blessed because during his time in training, he went to Inglewood.
Yeah.
So every summer assignment, all field, yes, summer assignment, his field training, Christmas, everything was done at Inglewood.
Really?
So it was interesting when Inglewood came up to be part as a cadet move for new lieutenants, we were just praying, oh my goodness, how wonderful this would be that we would go into appointment and we know people's names and where our office is and things like that that just is new when you first come in. We already know family, basically. Mm. So that was a blessing.
Okay. Captain Nikki, there's a way that we that I lead the conversation that I've shared with you and that our listeners are familiar with, that I ask you three times, if we knew you, we would know. But we're going to do it a little different this time, and you're going to speak really for the community of Inglewood where you're serving. And you're going to say, in a sense, if you knew Inglewood, you would know, and we'll do that three times, okay? All right, so if we knew Inglewood, we would know.
They have the best food ever.
Okay, good. What kind of food? Tell me about
it. Oh, my goodness. Barbecue is just the bomb.
Yeah.
Hands down, it is the best. And they have nachos. I've never had nachos like they have, but these little corner stores, they've got it made. They have me sold. So
yeah.
I would say the cultural of the food is beautiful. One of the ladies taught me how to make greens, and I asked her because she would always make these greens, and they were fabulous, and my husband always raved about it. And I'm like, you know what? I need you to show me. Mm-hmm. And she did. She took me down to the core kitchen, bought everything, and we sat and washed greens and cooked them. And now I have her recipe. So now my husband's super happy at home because I make these greens. And he was like, I think you really got it. I think you do.
So was it hard or was it easy?
No, it was easy. And it's just a lot of washing. You got to wash them a lot. But it just is simple. Simple. But it's so simple enough to where that's a cultural food for my husband.
And she probably loved teaching you.
Oh, my goodness. I just love her for it. Just love her. I will be forever grateful to her because she just is just a wonderful woman of God. And she just took that time out on something simple. I know that sounds crazy, but I will remember that experience that she took that time out to come and teach me.
So there are a lot of those kind of mom and pop corner.
Everywhere. They're everywhere. But, man, I just love their barbecue. I-59, man, I'm sorry. Shout out to them. That is the best barbecue place.
Where is it at?
It's on I-59, and that's what they call it. It's I'm not sure what street out there, but it is a famous barbecue place, and it's just phenomenal, just phenomenal.
All right. Okay, so now we go kind of a different direction or a little bit level deeper. If we knew Inglewood, we would know
the beauty of the culture, that it's common to see people on their front porches barbecuing, that it's common to see people just sitting on their porches. You know, you see different things in the neighborhood that you may not see in regular neighborhoods as of, you know, if you go into the, suburban areas. I was amazed last year when I saw the fire department come and open up the little...
The hydrants.
And watching the kids play in that. I only saw that on movies. I've never seen that happen. And I would just be, it would be a joy to go drive down the street and see all these children on a hot summer day just underneath that and playing. It was just great because I had never seen that ever before in my life. And I'm just like, that is a great neighborhood. That's where I wish I grew up, to see all of these kids playing underneath that water. It was just nice. So I would say that the beauty of the culture, they have a family culture, and it's just a beautiful thing to see that, you know, amongst all the violence they have, they still are true to themselves. They're still true.
I've heard it said that, like, a lot of families in the city or neighbors in the city live life in the front yard, not the backyard.
Yes.
And how that creates community and even a transparency in itself.
We have taken the barbecue pit at the core. take it right out to the front part and mm-hmm. barbecue, and people pull up. Hey, what are you selling? They think you're selling something. No, here, you can just have this.
Oh, wow.
And it's just, but it's a tool of ministry mm-hmm. because that's what they're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I thought that was really strange, but I'm like, people do this all the time here. But this is part of their culture. Mm-hmm. And it's learning that culture to just be a part and being able to belong with them.
Okay, so let's go another level deeper. If we knew Englewood, we would know.
There are more churches than anywhere in Chicago. There is over 300 churches in just Englewood and West Englewood alone. I can step out the front door of the core and I count 7 churches in my view.
Wow.
Not including mine.
Uh-huh.
So churches are huge, but they're small churches. Like maybe 5 people might go here. 4 people. So I'm not talking mega congregations, but they're just these little bitty churches, but they're everywhere. For every bar I see a church.
Mm.
They're just crawling mm-hmm. all over the place with these churches. And not a lot of people don't know that they're full of churches there. It's just they're small.
Do these churches work together in any way? Are they pretty independent in how they run?
I would say they're pretty independent. We will have a couple of churches that will come in wanting to help us with things, but it's more that they're independent. I think they're afraid they're going to lose their congregation.
Mm.
You know, I think there's that part of where's that line of if I come help you, you're not going to steal the sheep kind of thing, you know, mentality.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I think they worry about that. But, man, it's too bad. But then I think if some of those churches would close, you could get these beautiful congregations.
Mm-hmm.
You could do more. And I think that they just don't see that. But, mm-hmm. you know, nobody wants to leave the church, though.
What kind of impact do you think all these churches are influenced, maybe? Is their influence felt in the community?
I think mostly they're older congregations. Because I think that looking at my seniors, they are very involved in their churches. And then you get people in their 30s and, you know, you get that gap of emptiness. And we even see that in our core. You know, we don't see a lot of 30s, 40s,
mm-hmm.
you know, even some of our 20s.
Yeah.
They don't come. We have a lot of teenagers and youth. And then it's kind of
a gap.
Yes. And then we have mm-hmm. a lot of seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's just that missing factor in our church. Mm-hmm. And that could be everywhere.
I think so.
That mm-hmm. we're not connecting somewhere. I don't know mm-hmm. why or how, but it's hard to bring them in. It's hard to bring, you know, we encouraged our kids to bring their parents in, or it's a special event. And man, it's like pulling teeth trying to get them mm-hmm. in. It's hard. It's difficult.
Yeah.
So I don't know where we're disconnecting with that. A lot of it is, you know, for Englewood, you know, they either have a parent that is in prison or they live with grandma or a parent that's passed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of reasons why a parent can't be present. But, you know, and sometimes, you know, I'm sending my kids to church because then, hey, that's a great babysitter. So it's trying to still connect with the parents or whoever, you know, the aunt or uncle, whoever's watching them, grandma, to mm-hmm. make sure that they are connected. But here are some things that we can help you with.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying, but
yeah.
it can be difficult.
Well, I think that's in a lot of ways a universal experience in a lot of churches. I see that in women's ministries a
mm-hmm.
lot. There's a huge age gap, and it's usually my outlook, it looks like a lot of parents. Could be any age, but the kids are so activity-driven in this day, like how many sports,
right.
in band, in dance, and this and that, that it's hard to make time for yourself and get some, like, because coming to, like, a women's ministries group would be something for you. And so it's hard. I think there's a lot of pressure to cater to, I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but to our children and not care for ourselves as much. And so.
And we have to be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So when, for instance, we never had a nursery class during worship service. Everybody just sits in with us. A couple of years ago, we did start junior church, and that's been great. So at one point, all of us were in for holiness meeting,
mm-hmm.
from babies on up. I mean, and it could get a little distracting.
Yeah.
So we started junior church, and that's been working out great. But then we started getting some new families with young ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say five and down.
Yeah.
And that became a real big distraction because they're not old enough to go to junior church, but they're in there still with us. And you hear the babies and, you know, and, you know, some people, if you're really focused in the worship, that could be just a big distraction.
Yeah.
And I'm a mom, so I can tune them out. I'm the best person. And that's what someone says. You don't hear that? I'm like, I'm a mother of I got four children. I can tune out anything, anything.
Yeah.
If they could probably say mom 10 times and now you just get used to that noise. It's just like a back noise for you. But I started thinking, what can we do? What can we do? So I got with the core council and I said, we need a nursery class, but I can't do it by myself. Mm-hmm. I can't be out every Sunday taking these precious babies, even though I would stay there every single Sunday, take out the nursery, because that's just my age group.
Mm-hmm.
I would take them out, but I know that's not what I need to do. We need to come together. And so I presented that to the core council and I said, I'm just going to need your help. But I said, we need to be welcoming to new families.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be welcoming to say, hey, we can change our habits to bring you in. No mom wants to come in as a single mom and her kids are all crazy and crying. She's not going to come back.
Right.
You know, because she's not going to know. She don't want to interrupt the service. But if we, as she comes in, can say, hey, we're going to take your babies at this time.
Mm-hmm.
She's got time to herself now.
Yeah.
She's got time away. So I showed them that this was going to be a ministry, and we have gotten two new families out of it.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful because that mom now, she's a single mom, can actually listen to the service, and we have her children in the back, and it's just been a beautiful thing. She gets that time, that break.
Okay, so what brings you the most joy? What brings you the most joy from this appointment?
I would say the most joy is just the people. I really enjoy being at Inglewood. I love it. There's just not a day that goes by that I'm not grateful to be in this appointment. It's just something that at every core appointment, it's every day is different. But I am able to see growth in children. I'm able to see them smile when they come in, knowing that when they're in our building, they are safe. We had an incident at our other building. We have two buildings. And outside of that building on the street, a young man was shot. And it was difficult. It was on a Wednesday. And we had 100 youth in our building. And it was just a moment where we got your kids. Parents are calling because word travels fast on the street that over here there was a shooting. And all of a sudden, they know their kids are at the Salvation Army. Phones going crazy, moms coming in, frantic. Where's my child? Is my child here? Because a lot of kids just walk there. They don't come with adults. They leave when they want to. And that's just the
nature,
culture and the center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like someone comes and signs them in and signs them out. But so for after school, a lot of kids are just walking. And so they've not checked in with mom. She just knows that they go to Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to greet these women who are frantic to know, we have your child.
Mm-hmm.
We have your child.
Mm.
He's in the chapel. And we're going to feed him. Mm. And we're going to have a good worship service because on our Wednesday night program is a worship service. And it's just phenomenal to know that as a mother, too, they had relief. They're at the Salvation Army and they're safe. And it's just those are the moments that are beautiful. The moments of when a child comes up to me and says, well, why do you care about me? No one cares about me. And I'm like, I care about you because Jesus cares for you. Jesus loves you. And to know, to share that with them, because here they are bullied. Mm-hmm. Mom don't care, or mom's a drug addict or a prostitute. You know, they're the mother, really.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking
parenting.
Care of themselves. Mm-hmm. But to know that you can come here and just be a child. And I sent that same girl to camp. And I remember sending her to camp. Man, I feel like I was her mother.
Mm-hmm.
Made sure she had everything for camp. I was nervous because they'd never been to camp. She went with her two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, just go and be a child today, this week. Don't worry about your brothers. I know that's normal for you to take care of them. You go and be you this week. And as a mama bear, I had to go in the middle of the week and check on them. My husband's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I just got to make sure they're okay. And I did. I went all the way out to camp and checked on them. And I could not find her because she was just having such a wonderful time that she was gone. I found the brothers and they're like, oh, we don't even see her. You know, we don't know where she's at. But it was just a beautiful thing to know. I knew they were in good hands, but I had to know for myself. And when I picked them up, from the bus stop when they came back from camp, they laughed all the way home, giggling, laughing, full of joy. And I'm just like, Lord, let that sustain them because I know they're going to a place where it's horrible. Mm-hmm. I know they're going to a place where this could be drained immediately, but let them hang on to that joy because right now they have smiles and they're happy. They didn't have to worry about anything, where their next meal is, you know, what's going to happen when they go to bed? None of that. It's all taken care of. They have everything that they need. So, Father, just take care of them. Let them remember this joy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love camp.
I do too.
I love that about camp. I was a camp counselor at Wonderland, so I'm like having a flashback of those big charter. It was one of the charter buses pulling up, and these kids just coming out, and they get to relax. They get to just be kids, like you said. It's such a joy to watch. Okay, so what, if those are your joys, what's the most challenging part of being a minister in the neighborhood of Inglewood?
Challenging part is it's a lot of transient people. They are not finding the resources they need in Inglewood, so they tend to go to other places that have the resources that they need. So people leave all the time. You get connected to these families, and then they're just gone because they can't. They got kicked out of their housing, or they're going to a whole nother state. We're seeing a lot of people move to Iowa and Milwaukee to, I guess, there are better resources up there. So a lot of people are just moving out, finding resources to make it. And so that makes it hard because you get connected with these families and then they're gone. It's also hard with being a challenge is knowing that you may not see that kid again. We have buried a seven-year-old from our after-school program, and that was just devastating. Yeah. It's hard because one of our daughters works for our after-school program, so to see her grieve and trying to be strong for that. So we went to the candlelight, which was in by the house. It was he found a gun in his house and accidental shooting. So we went to the candlelight service, and it was just beautiful. But then we go to the funeral, and it's chaos. Mm-hmm. Chaos everywhere. We're in the church, and they're having the service, and people are starting to stand up and hollering and screaming, and you hear gun shooting, and I'm just thinking, what did I just bring my daughter to? So my husband's just like, just stay, you know, stay here. Don't move. And so the pastor's trying to regain the congregation, and as we are exiting and we viewed the body and we're exiting, we're going outside and you hear those gunshots again. And I'm just like, Father, he's seven. He is seven. He is not in no gang at seven.
Right.
Let them bury their dead. Let them bury their dead because they can't even do that. Can't even do that. My husband went to a funeral to bury someone and he was high in gang activity and the same thing happened there. And it's just one of those things where I want to make sure those kids know on that day they are loved. That day that they came to the Salvation Army, that they had love that day.
Like, don't wait a few weeks.
No.
Because you don't know that you have a few weeks, even if they move away or whatever.
You don't know. You don't know. I mean, when you look at the crime in Inglewood, how many people are dying because of a stray bullet? Many. Probably more in those numbers than intentional. A bullet went through the living room. So things like that, that you don't know if they're walking home, that they're just at the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's what happened to that young man at the other side of our building. He wasn't even from our neighborhood, and he got shot. So I make sure they know that. I make sure that when I'm there with them after school, hey, tell me something that good that happened today. Because, you know, usually when you ask a kid, tell me what you did today, I ate lunch, you know. Mm-hmm. No, tell me something that you saw good today. you know, something positive mm-hmm. that they can take back with them. And, you know, of course, I'm a hugger. So even those teenage boys, they get hugs from me and things like that. But you know what? When was the last time they probably got one?
Mm-hmm.
They may not. They may not. And so I want to make sure that when they're in our care, that they're getting love and that they know that they are loved. And we keep food on hand because a lot of kids don't get a lot to eat for school, even if it's a free lunch program. We make sure we are signed up for free lunches during summer mm-hmm. that people can come to the core and get a free lunch, because some kids, that's their only meals. They get breakfast and lunch at school, but then when summer comes, it can be a struggle. So I'm glad we're part of that program.
Well, one of the things we were talking about before we hit record was about, I was asking what as far as the issues go in the neighborhood, what is spoken about from the pulpit, or what do those conversations look like? And one of the main conversations, at least you have maybe even one-on-one or in group settings, really is about the gang activities. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of how and why so many young people are getting involved in gangs. So can you talk about those conversations? Because that's very specific to neighborhoods in Chicago, but really it's growing. It's getting in the suburbs. It's why are you hearing why young people get involved in gangs?
The most dangerous age is the 10-year-olds. And you don't think that. When you watch movies and you see gangs, you see like gangs in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case, because the people in their 20s are training the younger ones of where the guns are and where to do the shooting. Because if they get caught shooting, they're only going to juvenile. But if the 20-year-olds get caught shooting, they're going to jail. So they're going for the younger people. So that's the group you really should be afraid of. It shouldn't be the ones that are 20 years old walking in, because, you know, they're not going to take that chance. It's the younger ones, and they're teaching them of where these guns are, behind rocks and alleys, things like that. But I think they target these kids because these kids are looking for something. They want to be accepted. They want to be a part of something. That it doesn't matter if it's bad or good. They just want to belong. And they're able to get these kids because they're coming from bad homes and they're feeling like a part of something. So we are trying at the Salvation Army to make them feel like they belong, that they have an identity, that you don't have to be part of this thing to be a part of something. We started a new program called Celebrate Launch and Landing, and it's a wonderful time that we were able to get the Thomas Lyle funding. So that has been a beautiful thing, because we were able, since it's Salvation Army money, to put worship into it.
Mm.
Whereas we get grants all the time, but, you know, there's that stipulation with if it being
what can you do with it?
Yeah, you can't put religion in there, things like that. But with this, we were able to full out go with a worship service on Wednesday. They have a worship service, and then they break out into groups and are mentored. And so they have a topic each week.
Mm-hmm.
This week they're talking about respect.
Sounds like embrace. Oh, we have a monthly discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So weekly.
Yes.
And the theme is the theme's respect.
Right. So they'll have a whole worship service we have a worship team, live band worship team. They will get scripture and they will have a devotional. And the devotional will be based around respect. And then from there, they have breakout questions that they break out with their mentors. And we have seen so much growth. And you wouldn't think that on a Wednesday, I wouldn't call it Bible study, but it's a worship service, that you would draw 100 kids in.
Wow.
We don't even have that many on our after-school nights.
Mm.
But they come for this. They come because they can be them, and then they have a mentor. And that mentor keeps up with them week-long. You know, what are your grades like? What's going on at home? What do you need help with? Hey, I need a food basket. Okay, we're going to get you one. You know, things like that, that we can help them so that they are being come whole and feeling belonged.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that's getting them. They need to be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing these kids coming on Sunday now because they just need something to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep them busy.
So it's that community aspect, belonging, family. Are there any stereotypes about Inglewood that you could debunk for us, are things that you hear people think about the South Side or...
I guess I get a lot of people that say, oh, I'm praying for you because where you're at. And I just want to say, just pray for the ministry. I'm safe.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. You know, that's when God calls me to go. But I know that I go into a rough neighborhood every day, but I go joyfully. I do. I just love being there. It's just, there's something about that spirit there, the people. I think they think that everybody in Inglewood is just horrible. Mm. You know, everybody's just gang members and shooting everybody up. And that's not the case at all. I see wonderful families coming in, and that's all they want is just to be loved on. And I'm more than happy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
More than happy. But I think that we just see it as poor people, no resources, drugs, prostitutes. You know, you just start, and the news doesn't help it at all. Yes, there's problems, and Inglewood's very aware of these problems, but don't just write them off for that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just say that the whole city's bad,
because
it's not. There's people out there that's just wonderful people. There's people, celebrities from Inglewood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they made it, but I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
One of the things that you had said when we were chatting before was how, especially when we were talking about the gang situation, was how the church in a lot of ways has failed to combat that problem. Do you want to talk a bit about that or what you think the church can do better? As far as like the physical building goes, but like church as a body.
I think where we fail as a church is because we don't necessarily want those people in. They're bad kids, or they're related to so-and-so, or, you know, and a lot of times we have people who come in and say, well, you know, he's with this gang. And I don't even want to know that. I want to know that his name is Kayvon and that he's a young man that just wants to be a kid. But there's so many times that we get all these children in without parents. And then, you know, you can hear some of the people's like, well, those kids are just so bad, you know. But do you have to go home in their circumstance? No, we don't. We're going to go home to a nice house, a bed, my own blanket. I don't have to share. You know, the only person I'm sharing a bed with is my husband. But some of these are sharing a bed with their brothers and sisters. Some of these are being the mom. I have many times where a neighbor will say, you know, their mother is never home. But I don't see that, you know, because I'm just picking them up for program. But it's just difficult on some of the things that these kids go through. And why do we turn them away? Because we're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Their clothes may not smell like ours. They may have not taken a bath in a couple of days. You know, why do we turn them away when we know that's not what Jesus did?
Mm.
Jesus brought them all in. He didn't care. He healed people with leprosy, people who were outcasted. And sometimes I feel like that's how society sees Inglewood, is people with leprosy.
Mm.
I can't get too close to them. But man, you start showing the love of Christ. What a beautiful ministry that is, because they're going to soak it up like a sponge. Because just like that young lady said to me, why do you care? Why do you care? No one's cared for me. But someone's coming along to saying, I care for you because Christ cares for me. And that just is a beautiful thing. Gang members show that you can be accepted.
Mm. So you're saying gang members provide that. Provide that.
Yes.
Welcome.
Yes.
As you are.
And they hit on the things that those children need. Hey, I can give you some money. You could take that money to your mom and she can pay rent. And that puts a mom at an awkward situation because she needs that money. But yet she knows what her child's doing to get that money.
Mm.
And that makes it hard, because then what do you do? Tell your child, no, you don't want that. But then you may not have a house to live in next month. So I see how it gets all tangled up. And I see where that puts people at a disadvantage. But we have to learn how to meet those needs. William Booth did it very well at the very beginning. Soup, soap, salvation. Salvation was last. And sometimes I think we just get overcome with that. Let's meet their physical needs first. Clean them up, feed them, get them things that they need. And then let's talk about Jesus. And I think sometimes we just either don't want people that don't look like us in our congregation, or man, they're a handful because their mom don't come with them. But instead, we're not realizing that you're changing some lives here. changing lives that are just as valuable as anybody else.
One of the things I see it is we often don't want to be inconvenienced or uncomfortable. And seeing people in situations that are difficult, whether it's that you can tell that they haven't bathed recently and there's a smell or whatever, like something like that makes us uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of, you know, in your worst self, you're like, I wish they'd just go away. Mm-hmm. Like if we're honest with ourselves, some that's crossed our mind, like, oh, I don't have the energy for this today. But that's not what the Lord asks of us. He asks us to let things get inconvenient.
Yes, yes.
And not to see people as an inconvenience or a burden. Because that's how I think a lot of us, you know, this is uncomfortable. This is inconvenient. This is getting in the way of me going out to lunch after church.
And what we did is hygiene is a problem. Yeah, but, you know, I think back in what teenage boy
I know,
is
this, yeah.
Right?
All you know? Teen boys stink.
But what we did is for the after school program is I just sent a letter out saying, hey, if you have any donations you'd like to give us, we want to make these hygiene bags. We want to equip these kids. So what we did is we got a lot of donations in and we made these bags with hygiene products in. And then the male staff took the boys and the female staff and I took the girls. Mm-hmm. And then we walked through what the things were in the bag. And I just remember one of the girls like, oh, I got that at home. And I said, well, you're blessed because there's some in here that their mama has to take money somewhere else. And there were some girls that didn't know you need to put deodorant on every day. Mm-hmm. This is what deodorant is. Mm-hmm. And this is where it goes. I mean, we walked it through because some of these kids some of it is just basic of, I didn't know. And I can't tell you how many kids have come back and said, can I have some more toothpaste? Because mm-hmm. they didn't know. And I'm just like, I sure can. I can get you toothpaste. That's great. But it's just teaching. Mm-hmm. There's a part where it fails. And I'm not saying it's the parents' fault. I'm not saying it's the school's fault. It's just, but still, if it's failing, and as a church we don't see that, we're failing them too.
Yeah.
We're failing them and over a basic need of just hygiene, sitting down, telling them this is what we're supposed to be doing. Here's a washcloth. This is how, you know, and I gave them, they got soap, simple stuff. But, you know, it just, you know, it's a wonderful thing, though, just to see them when they come back for toothpaste.
Well, thank you, Captain Nikki, for making time. And, you know, the Prepare podcast exists so that our listeners, who are typically women, can hear from other female leaders and officers and hear from their experiences and their wisdom to help prepare and equip us in our faith and our pursuits and our callings. So I know that this conversation and what you've shared is going to impact our listeners and open their eyes to some things. Like we were saying in the beginning that, you know, it's important to research topics before you really make any kind of judgment call. And sometimes the best research isn't an article. It's actually a conversation.
Yes.
With someone that lives it, that lives there, ministers there, and it's just a part of their daily life. So you've, I'm certain, have opened a lot of our eyes, helping our people stay woke, as they say.
Yes.
As they say. And I hope this is an encouragement for our listeners to not make judgment calls or, yeah, make assumptions about people and about neighborhoods. And it's not all the media tells us it is.
I agree. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks. Thank you again for listening. Like Nikki said, be in prayer for the ministry at work in Englewood, that many would come to know that Christ loves them. And share that love in whatever community you are in, loving others without conditions and expectations. Thanks again for listening.